Hello, it is September 21st, 2016. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 613 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. We're a couple days late on this podcast, but it's worth it because we have two podcasts this week. The first comes today. We are talking to Nate Jackson. He's, of course, a former NFL player and author of the new book, Fantasy Man, a former NFL player's descent into the brutality of fantasy football, edited by my friend David Hershey, who around the time that you will be listening to this podcast, I will be saying goodbye to from New York City. He's moving to Los Angeles. He was the editor of my book, God Save the Fan, and one of my favorite people on the entire planet. He is the editor of this book. You should buy the book anyway because it's good, and Nate Jackson's a really smart guy, but also do it for David Hershey for those funds from the moving from New York City to Los Angeles. We have two podcasts this week. The second podcast will be Allison. We're going to talk to Allison. Allison has a fun job this week. She is in Port St. Lucie with Tim Tebow. She's on the Tim Tebow beat all week. So we're going to have a show. I think the show will be out Friday where we're going to discuss how her week has been. I am not envious that she is there at all. But anyway, so we remind you as always, please subscribe to the Will Leach Experience on iTunes. Give us a nice review. It makes it easier for people to find the podcast. And music as always is by the Sundogs. But mostly, enjoy this podcast with Nate Jackson. Again, the book is Fantasy Man, a former NFL player's descent into the brutality of fantasy football. I don't have a send off at the end of the podcast. So have a great week, everyone. And then I'll be back with Allison Futter on Friday. But here is Nate Jackson. All right, Nate, first off, thank you for taking the time with me. I've mentioned this to you before. We, of course, both know David Hershey. He was both of our book editors. I generally find it the same level of irritation when someone that is good at so many other things can also write. You have the same problem with you that I had with President Obama when I first read his book. I was like, crap, the one thing I could do is write, and this guy can do all these other things that can do that. So I'm mad at you, first off.
Well, I heard you're a pretty good poker player.
Yes, let's go with that.
Just so, all around swell guy.
Yeah, thanks, man. The book is Fantasy Man, a former NFL's descent in the brutality of fantasy football, and I think that kind of paints, I think, in a way that makes it look like it's a specifically fantasy football book. But I think those that people that read Slow Getting Up, which I think is a terrific book, and we've talked about it on this podcast before, I think it's still in a lot of ways a continuation of a lot of the same themes from that book. Yes.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of life after the NFL type of thing, whereas Slow Getting Up was about life inside the NFL. I used fantasy football as the template to tell that story about what it's like afterwards, trying to move on with life, especially having spent so much of my life playing that game and having still some connections to it. And a lot of my friends are still huge football fans, and they asked me if I wanted to be in this fantasy league with them about 4 years ago, and I started playing fantasy football with them. So we have our fantasy draft. We get together for a couple of nights in late summer and do our draft, and that's where the book starts off, at the draft, picking our teams, and then I follow my team through last season, and I follow it through the lens of, you know, fantasy football coach, but also interspersed with my own experience playing the real thing, and kind of serves as a good template to go back and forth between the fantasy and the reality.
One of the fascinating things I think about football and is the difference of the perception and the understanding. It's one of the reasons I think your first book is so good. The dip between this thing that is watched, the last seven Super Bowls are the most seven watched television programs of all time. People, this is the American way in a lot of ways to watch football and to be obsessed with football. But the people that are watching at home have absolutely no understanding of what's actually going on. Never minding just like not understanding how the plays work, but understanding the brutality of what's happening on the field. And I'm curious, when you make that transition out of the game, you know, I have no desire. One of the things that you talk about in your book, and I think a lot of football players talk about, is like when they're on the field, they like one of the things they love football is you have this urge to hit someone or to be hit and to have this kind of physical connection. I don't have that in my life like at all. But I like watching. But I like watching football. I'm curious. Do you like watching football on television?
Yeah, I like watching it. I don't like watching it probably for the same reasons as most other people like watching it who didn't play it. I enjoy watching it because I appreciate what it took to get to that point. For all these guys who are on the field, you see them on the field and you think that's their job, right, to play a football game on Sunday. But to get on that field at all on Sunday, they go through so much practice, so much preparation, so much meetings, lifting weights, running, dealing with a lot of off-the-field stuff. 349 days a year, you're still a professional football player, even though you're not playing a pro football game. And I think that nuance is interesting to me. And so I'm drawn to the game, whether I like it or not. I still kind of crave that contact that I don't have anymore. I was conditioned for it. My self-worth was based on how well I was able to withstand that. And so the toughest guys make it the furthest. And so it's about swallowing your pain and not talking about when you're hurt. And the difficult part is when you transition into the real world, that kind of approach to life doesn't always work. You got to do what's right for you. You got to do what's right for your own body, for your own mind. Speak up for yourself. Come up with a plan. Articulate your ideas. Be creative. These things are not used in the world of football. Football wants obedient soldiers. Football wants players to shut up, take directions, and play. The more robotic or the more you can follow orders, the more likely you'll be on an NFL field. I mean, these days you watch an NFL game, it doesn't matter what game you're watching the exact same product. It's basically 32 bowls of the same soup in the NFL. And that's why all these teams are one week winning, the next week losing. And in the media, it ends up being, these guys suck. They're pathetic. These guys are amazing. No, they're all the same. It's all identical media protocol, identical meeting schedules, identical plays. Coaches get shuffled from team to team. Players are from team to team. They're stealing each other's plays. It's all, to me, the same exact product. It is an engaging product. It's really dynamic, though, and it's impossible to duplicate. And so it's really, really lucrative. And it's baked into the American bread now, like you were saying. I mean, everybody watches the Super Bowl. It goes hand in hand with Thanksgiving and New Year's and these holidays. And it's very, very much an American game. And, yeah, man, it's very, very powerful. And I have a hard time just kind of turning from it.
Do you think there's I feel like the way, you know, I remember there was a study, Bloomberg did a study like a year and a half ago where they asked like wealthy families, hey, would you let your kids play football? And like 65% of them said, nope, we would not let our kids play football. No way. But they are very eager to let other people's children play football and to watch them do it. I'm curious, how do players, and you now being now around dopes like me and dopes like David Hershey, who have nothing to, who have no connection to actually playing the game at all, do you have a hard time relating to our fandom of football? Because to me, you know, I see it on television and I'm like, oh, Jay Cutler isn't, he doesn't have the will to win and blah, blah, blah. Like I know anything. Is it hard to not just the transition of yourself coming back into the world that the rest of us live in, but to watch the way other people understand the game that you kind of were so conditioned to be so close to?
Yeah, it's a little frustrating sometimes, especially in the position I'm in. You know, before I wrote my book, I was writing articles and I was participating in roundtable discussions and I was, you know, part of the media in a way, part of journalism, trying to write about this sport that I knew and running up against a lot of trite narratives that were, this guy sucks, he should be fired, this guy's the greatest, he should be anointed, who are the losers, chase him out of town. And it doesn't really take into account the fact that these guys are all the cream of the crop. You know, these guys are the best 2,000 football players on planet Earth. None of them are losers. None of them suck. If the play should have been made, it would have been made. You know, when it's, he should have done that, he's got to do that, he can't do that. Well, yeah, he can do that. He just did it, you know. And so the game, I think, is smarter than the people who cover it. And oftentimes we kind of tie ourselves in knots trying to explain things that are unexplainable. There is no statistics that will explain to you why a team wins or why a team loses. The score is really the only thing that matters. But we've kind of come up with so many terms, so much language around it, so many numbers to back things up, that you have a lot of people who become experts and end up kind of steering the ship that these players end up having to ride on. And I think just, you know, I also know that this kind of attention is what makes it so popular and what makes it so engaging, is that everyone has an opinion. And fantasy football kind of pulls that in to a different realm, and now everybody has a stake, whether it's a monetary stake or just a personal emotional investment. It seems to make such a splash with people, especially men in America who are oftentimes emasculated by whatever job they have or whatever role they have now in society, and kind of lament that role and find some escape in football and in fantasy football. And I think that's great to have that kind of inclusive like shared experience, but to hold the players under your thumb and to make them feel like crap for not making a play or not fulfilling some expectation, I think is what becomes problematic.
Yeah, I think you're onto something with the idea of like a guy's guy thing when it comes to fantasy football. I think of those endless DraftKings commercials, but to me, it wasn't so much the ubiquity of them as much as they were played up as if like these were like masters of the universe, boiler room, like I'm like, you know, almost these like Walt, like this pseudo Wall Street thing where you're like the tough guy that wins the game or so on. And it's funny to think that they definitely felt like this kind of, you know, financial Wall Street asshole vibe, to be honest, to kind of watch those commercials. And I feel like for some people, particularly, and then you talk about this in your book a little bit, the difference between fantasy football and DraftKings and that kind of daily fantasy, that feels like that. That feels like something, like I look at DraftKings and FanDuel and that stuff, that not only does that not seem like football, it doesn't, I mean, that has nothing to do with even fantasy football. Like, it just feels like just like random guessing stock market stuff.
Yeah, it's like it's online poker, basically. I mean, the online poker crowd went over to fantasy football, and the guys who win the most money on DraftKings and FanDuel are people who understand the algorithms and play like 500 games at once, you know, and clean up against the guy named Joe in Kansas who saw the commercial and decided to put $100 down on one game. And it definitely seems like a bit of a racket. When we watch the NFL Network or ESPN, or you read these articles from the fantasy football experts that tell you who's going to catch how many balls and why, they usually end up being wrong, but no one really holds them to it because there's always the next game and there's always that one that they did get right to prop up. But it seems like it's pinned the tail on the donkey in a lot of ways. A football team moves the ball together. One man, yes, he's the guy who holds the ball, but it's very difficult to predict that on a football team. And especially, you know, NFL teams are correctional facilities in a lot of ways. When I say that, I mean that if we get torched for 200 yards on the ground this week, next week, we're going to make sure that doesn't happen to us. You know, we're going to put all our eggs in the run-stopping basket to make sure that doesn't happen. And so these teams end up being lopsided as far as over-correcting problems. And a lot of these times, the fantasy football experts will base their assumptions on what this guy did last week. Well, if he had a big week last week, he's scheduled to have a big week this week. That's not really how it goes in football. If this guy had a big week last week, then the next team who plays him is going to make sure that he does not have a big week this week, and they're going to make sure they stop him so the other guy ends up having a big week. And so it's very speculative, man. Exactly like you said, it's like stock market speculation, and anybody can be right. That's the thing. I mean, if you're right, if you guess right, then you're the man, and you're just as good at football as all the guys that you picked on your team.
Yeah. Yes, that's the way it works, I think.
Yeah.
I want to go back to kind of the thing you talked about earlier. I thought it was a fascinating statement, the notion that dealing with the kind of the outside world after football, kind of you have to be creative and you have to treat the world differently than you did when you played football. Do you miss following orders? Like, you're a creative guy, you're a smart guy. We've talked many times, we've hung out. You're clearly an intelligent person. But do you miss, you know, is there comfort in hegemony, I suppose, and not having to deal with the outside world in that way?
Yeah, certainly. There's something that's kind of soothing about having a plan, programming it in, and just doing it. But in the big picture, you know, I what I appreciated about the NFL in that regard was being told like it is, being told whether I was in good stead or bad stead with the coaches, being told if I fucked up or if I did a great job, because there's no mincing of words in that world. You know, if you have a locker, you're doing a good job. If you don't, it means you messed up and you get cut. Whereas in the real world, people are very vague with the things they say. They may say they'll call you tomorrow. That might mean 2 weeks from now. They may say, and I wrote about this in my book, I had an experience in Hollywood where I was told by this writer and director that I was going to be involved in the film. I was going to be in the editing room. I was going to be a consultant. I was going to be in the film for sure. And then he was going to help me write my own show based on Slow Getting Up. All this was a guarantee. I mean, he told me this multiple times. Of course, none of that ended up happening. But I believed him because in the world I came from, people told me what was going to happen, and it happened that way. So coaches, they don't play games with you in the NFL. They tell you like it is. I do miss that part of it. I don't miss just kind of sitting there obeying orders that I don't believe in, because there were a lot of times when I was in the NFL sitting in meetings for 4 hours every day and listening to the kind of the same drone. I disagreed with a lot of it. I thought football conceptually, offensively, has gotten too predictable, but also too verbose, too difficult to understand, too bent on these almost indecipherable languages and coverages and reads. And, you know, you wonder why some quarterbacks struggle so much is because their brains are full of this jargon that doesn't make any sense. And these defenses are very difficult to read, and they can't just go out there and play. I mean, a guy who's really, really good in college, he's a really, really good football player. There's no reason why he shouldn't be good in the NFL. The reason why he's not good in the NFL is because his coaches are not malleable. You go there and you got to play by their rules, and they tell you what works and what doesn't. I think the sport is not evolving because of the rigidity of coaches and the fact that if they try anything outside the box or anything new and it doesn't work, they get killed in the media. Last year there was a play, the Colts tried like a swinging gate fake punt play on fourth down. It didn't work. It got swallowed up and they turn over on downs. Big deal. The play didn't work. Lots of plays don't work. But the media really had it in for him and just really, you know, called for the coach to be fired. I think the special teams coach was fired after that, and they called for the player who did it to be fired. I mean, there's so much backlash against anybody who goes against the grain that it's difficult to do anything new or evolved.
Do you think, and I know you've got a lot of other stuff to do today, so I'll finish with this question. Do you think that hegemony, I mean, I have to ask you about Colin Kaepernick. That's the thing that's really the big story in the NFL right now. And to me, it seems like obviously he's got his specific protest about the issues that he cares about. But to me, I think another fascinating aspect to it has been the league's response has often, like I looked at Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones said, well, I'm proud that I have a team where all 53 players stand for the flag and so on. But maybe Jerry Jones is so out of it that he actually thinks, oh, I just happen to have the 53 players that have no issues with it. Or more likely, they're afraid of Jerry Jones. And there's a certain kind of control that owners and the league want to have over players. To me, whatever your thoughts about Kaepernick's protest, I feel like even if you think, no, you should stand for that flag, the idea of any sort of player autonomy in a league that discourages that would seem to maybe be a step forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a crack in the castle wall, you know, and it's a player kind of standing up for himself and deciding to come up with his own plan and implementing it and flying in the face of some perceived kind of rituals that are part of football. You know, you don't talk back in meetings. You say, yes, sir. You stand for the national anthem. You run the plays as they're called. You take it when a coach tells you messed up. And I think players are starting to realize that maybe they have the power here. Maybe they have more control than they realize. After all, they are the best in the world at what they do. There are very few other industries in which the best in the world at what they do are being told what to do by people who are never any good at it in the first place. That's what's interesting about it. These guys have football instincts that are like artists. They're very refined, but they get to the NFL and they got to clip those wings and listen to men who have conceptual ideas about what it means, but really don't have that artistic feel of what it's like on the football field. And that goes off the field too. It follows you off the field where you can't even trust your own epiphanies off the field because the ones you had on the field are snuffed out by coaches who don't want to see you do your own shit. And Colin Kaepernick, I think, has been through so much with that. You know, he led his team to the Super Bowl. He was the toast of the town in San Francisco. Then the organization let everybody go. He was the only one left. And then when they started losing, everyone in the Bay Area and California started coming down on Colin Kaepernick like it was his fault, attacking him, whereas he used to be their hero, and now he's the GOAT. I think he felt slighted by that, and he started to realize the fickle nature of fans and how maybe all this is a facade, maybe it's not real, maybe it's bullshit, and he started thinking about how he can kind of take the power back. And I feel proud of him that he's doing that. I don't really have anything to say negative about what he's doing. I think it's good for the league in the long run.
All right, Nate, it's always fascinating to talk to you. I know you only have so much time. It's pub day, so everyone, make sure to go out and buy Fantasy Man, a former NFL player to sit in the brutality of fantasy football. It's a terrific book, and I want David not only you to be able to eat, but David Hershey to be able to eat. So I encourage everyone to go out and buy the book. Nate, it's always an honor, a pleasure to talk to you, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate you having me on, man.
Of course. Be safe, man. Take care.
All right. See ya.